This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Indeed it is. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I suck so you don't have to. Although, if you catch up on Twitter, we had Hub Arkish on about an hour ago. And he was talking about Sam Darnold. And, of course, he should be a serviceable quarterback because he should know what he's doing. He's been in the league 18, 19 years, whatever it's been. And then... He said it again, and of course, I said, Hub, he's been the year, you know, he's 27, and he was drafted in 2018, and then Hub retweeted later, Hub tweeted out, he was doing some work on Joe Flacco before he went on with me, and had Flacco's age and numbers, and then the question came up about Darnold, and he confused them, and got them conflated, and he said, look, really stupid, really dumb, I'm really sorry. It's okay, Hub. We got it. We understood it. But I'll still put the same question that I asked Hub to our next guest, Aaron Lemming, SB Nation, 24/7 Sports. Aaron, Sam Darnold?
Well, I mean, Sam Darnold's been playing a heck of a lot better lately. I don't know. It's weird. It's one of those, and I'm sure you probably do the same thing, where you kind of go through, whether it's baseball, football, whatever. I gave up on baseball a while ago, so I, you know, mainly do it for football. But it's like you go through and you predict records, you know, at the beginning of the year, and then you kind of reflect back through the season and kind of see where you're wrong, where you're right. And the Vikings have been my biggest miss, you know, because Sam Darnold had that really good stretch. I think it was like three or four games with Carolina a few years ago. And then, you know, obviously that kind of fell apart. And, you know, then he was with San Francisco last year. But, I mean, Darnold's been playing pretty dang well. Not as good as he did over the first few games. But, I mean, if you look at his numbers comparatively to a lot of the other quarterbacks around the league, I mean, he's been pretty dang good, which it's kind of tough for J.J. McCarthy. I don't know what they're going to do next year. I mean, obviously, they drafted him in the first round, but it's a weird situation in Minnesota. I mean, they're one of two 5-0 teams right now, and the Bears are weirdly chasing them when I figured Minnesota was going to be down at the bottom.
Talking with Aaron Lemming, 24/7 Sports and SB Nation, and he writes on the Bears. He's joining me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And when we talk, so it's Lions-Vikings tomorrow, a game of great interest to Bears fans. 5-0 Vikes, 4-1 Lions. Everybody expected Lions to be near the top. And like you said, the Vikings didn't seem to have that kind of cachet or that kind of threat now that they're there. What does this mean for the way the Bears have played? And what does this mean going forward?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest takeaway so far this year through, you know, six-plus games is the fact that the NFC North is really good. I mean, it's, you know, a combined 17-5 record so far. No other division even comes close. The NFC as a whole actually has looked considerably better than the AFC so far. So I think as far as what it means for the Bears, I mean, I don't think in terms of, like, record expectations, I don't think anything should change. But obviously, you know, they're 4-2. They're going to be coming out of the bye with a tough game against Washington. Whether Washington's 5-2 or 4-3, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Washington's offense has been playing really well. And then they have two very winnable games against Arizona and New England before they start that last eight-game stretch where they have six divisional opponents in their final eight games. And even those two other eight games, or of those eight games that they have, yeah, the 49ers and the Seahawks. So I think really the biggest takeaway so far, at least for me, and this is kind of something I was reflecting on earlier this week, is just they've played well for the most part. Obviously, you'd like to see them get off to better starts. You would like to see the offense not start as bad as they did over the first, you know, two and a half games of the season. But, I mean, they're right where they should be. They're 4-2. I think if they come out of this three-game stretch at 6-3, that sets them up for, you know, if they deserve to make the playoffs, they've at least got to go 4-4 in that stretch of where the divisional games are, you know, and then Seattle and the 49ers. So they go 4-4. That gets them to 10-7. That gets them with a pretty solid conference record overall. That should be enough to get them into the playoffs. But I think really what this comes down to is this is a really bad time, unfortunately, for the Bears to be kind of coming out of that rebuild with as good as the rest of the NFC North is.
My guest is Aaron Lemming of 24/7 Sports and SB Nation. I find myself, maybe you've visited the parallel universes I'm in. And you've just outlined it about talking about the games that they should win. Commanders could be tough, but there's the Cardinals and the Patriots, and yet you were the one who tweeted out about the lousy, sucky defenses that the Commanders, followed by the Cardinals, followed by the Patriots, will bring to face the Bears. And I'm finding myself in the parallel universe of whatever the Bears' record might be versus what the offense can do against defenses begging to be torn up, and the Bears have done that. And I don't know which should be more important to me. If you can live in those parallel universes, versus which is more important and why?
I think really what this comes down to is, I mean, obviously, you know, wins and losses are probably the most important thing for a team coming out of a rebuild. But the path to long-term success for this team is for Caleb Williams to be the best quarterback he can. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, letting young quarterbacks gain confidence out of the gate and then letting them build on that later on in the season against better teams. So I think that them reeling off the type of performances that they've had over the last 3 weeks is kind of one of those things. You know, you say it's a parallel universe. Well, I think it kind of works in parallel with each other, right? Where if the offense continues to play well and they continue to build confidence over these next three games against, you know, defenses that rank 28th, 29th, and 23rd in defensive DVOA going into week 7, then you're looking at a situation where there's going to be a level of confidence going into some of those divisional games. I mean, if you just look at the division as a whole right now, I mean, you've got Minnesota's defense is playing really, really well under Brian Flores. I think, you know, Green Bay's defense is kind of hit or miss. I think the biggest issue there with the Bears is their defensive front. I mean, they still have a very deep defensive line. And then with Detroit, I mean, obviously missing Aiden Hutchinson, that's going to hurt. But the defense has been playing better than I think most people had expected, although it'll be interesting to kind of see with the injuries. But I do think they kind of work in parallel. I think that if Caleb Williams continues to build on what he's done the last few games, it doesn't matter who it's against. You can only play who's on your schedule. So I think if he continues to build that confidence, it's only going to help them moving forward. Because again, for as bad as we talk about these, you know, these opposing defenses over these next 3 weeks playing, the Bears defense on the other side of things has got 12 straight games of allowing opponents, you know, of 21 points or less. So, I mean, that's kind of another factor to all this too, where, you know, the Washington game, their defense has been really bad, but their offense has been putting up a ton of points. So if the defense continues to play well, even if the offense takes a step back with better competition, I mean, they still theoretically should be in pretty good shape.
Talking with Aaron Lemming, 24/7 Sports and SB Nation. We're talking about the Bears here on The Score. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670. So the Raiders trade Devontae Adams, and now they're in free fall, trade off, make us an offer, garage sale. Max Crosby is right there, but now they're trying to run damage control so that they don't lose leverage if they were going to trade him by saying he's not going to be traded. Max saying, I don't want to be leave anywhere, but he already said it. He doesn't want to be part of a rebuild, and that's the Raiders' only hope. What do you think? How much is too much for the Bears to get Max Crosby?
Well, I think you're looking at probably something similar to the Khalil Mack deal from 2018 in terms of compensation, which was two firsts and then a third. So, I mean, it's one of those tough situations where you look at it. And again, if you go back to 2018, Ryan Pace made a calculated gamble and saying like, hey, we've got our quarterback, we've got the offense we want, we've got an offensive minded coach, we're going to throw a bunch of money on the defense. And obviously that ended up working out. I do think this is a little bit different of a situation, but I think if you look at just the overall cap ramifications and then just what they've spent in terms of, you know, both sides of the ball so far, the Bears have a lot more tied up in terms of overall cap money and, you know, future money towards the defense than they do the offense right now. So again, you got a rookie quarterback, could make some sense, but I think at the same time, if you're looking at it, you've got a first round pick next year. You've got 2 second round picks. One of those is going to be extremely high because of Carolina. It may end up making more sense to kind of hold on and not make that type of big move. Cause again, you're also talking about cap ramifications and the fact that the Bears are not going to have nearly as much fluidity as they have in years past. So I get it, and I wouldn't be upset if they made the move, but I also kind of wonder, especially moving forward with Keenan Allen being a free agent next year, you know, they're going to have to spend some money on that offensive line. I don't know that it's going to make a ton of sense to sink, let's just say, $140, $150 million a year in the defense and then kind of hope that you're drafting well offensively.
Well, they do draft well. Ryan Poles, by and large, does draft well. I wish he knew that you were allowed to draft offensive linemen more than once a decade or something. I know he hasn't been here a decade. Darnell Wright is a good choice, and I like all that. I like the way he went about it. I just think it's going to be hard to find a stud offensive lineman in free agency. Certainly can't do it in trade. And I just think I made the comparison to what Steve Stone used to describe the Orioles that he played for. When they lost a hitter, they would go get more pitching. So in the Bears, they can't make their offensive line any better right now. So go get another defensive lineman and make your defense better, and maybe they score on top of terrorizing quarterbacks, on top of doing all that. You're not going to draft anybody who's as polished as a 27-year-old Max Crosby. And if I could take issue with what you said about Khalil Mack, I understand the comparisons. He, too, was 27 when the Bears acquired him, and Montez Sweat was 27 when the Bears acquired him, and here's Max Crosby. Seems like a good age, especially to get something out of them. If you use Ryan Pace as a barometer, you know you've overpaid, because that's all he ever did. So I would have to come down from there, and then I believe I could find a happy medium. If he didn't have to give up two first-rounders, if you weren't given the Khalil Mack deal, do you think inside the rookie contract of Caleb Williams that it makes sense to give up a first rounder in the next 2 years, or no?
I mean, it definitely could. I mean, it really kind of depends on how you feel, you know, more pointedly, how you feel about the offense. I mean, again, you've got DJ Moore under contract for a while. You've got Roma Dunze under contract for a while. So, you know, Cole Kmet. So, I mean, you've got a quality amount of weapons. I think really what this comes down to is more of the trenches, right? You're looking at it. I mean, and again, maybe you have a different viewpoint on it than I do, but I look at this offensive line and I say, okay, Darnell Wright was the top 10 pick 2 years ago. Hasn't exactly lived up to expectations yet, but he has been playing better as of late. Like, he's going to be your right tackle in 2025. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the rest of the offensive line and it's like, Nate Davis is absolutely not going to be here. Tevin Jenkins is going to want to get paid, and frankly, outside of last game, he really hasn't looked that good this year. Ryan Bates is, you know, he's under contract, but it's like, if he's got an arthritic condition in his arm, I don't know what you're looking at there. Then you even look at left tackle with Braxton Jones. I mean, you've got four spots conceivably. I'm not saying that they will do this all in one offseason, but you got four spots where you could upgrade. And even if you're talking about primarily draft picks, you're going to be talking about having to spend some sort of money, whether that's going out and signing a guy like Trey Smith or whatever the case may be. So it's kind of, you get, like you brought up, I mean, you get to that point where Caleb Williams is going to be under cheap, and I put that in quotation marks, because I mean, it's still not overly cheap, but it's cheap control for a quarterback for the next, you know, 4+ years with the 5th-year option. So you could absolutely justify the move, but I think with that being said, I think there would be an argument to be made, too, that you're kind of traveling back down the same path that the Bears always have, where they're putting way more resources into the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side. So, I mean, it's an interesting debate either way. I mean, you're adding a all-pro level player to your team, but at what cost does that come down to, especially if it's, you know, if it's costing you on the offensive line?
So the Bears bye tomorrow gives you a chance to watch football differently. And I've asked everybody to come on what they're watching, how they're watching. And so what are your viewing plans? What's game is of greatest priority or most interest, and or the two or three games that you will you plan to be glued to more than others?
So I usually try to watch the Bears' next opponent, which would be Washington. And I would be lying if I told you I remember when they played. I have to look at the schedule again. So it's always this balance, right? So my wife is a Browns fan. So we sit here and, she's watching the Browns and Bengals game regardless. So I'm going to have to go down in the basement and I'm going to have to, you know, kind of line this up. The nice thing is this is not promotion by any means, but YouTube has finally got their thing figured out where you can put multiple games on the same TV. I mean, obviously, that Minnesota-Detroit game is going to be, you know, a priority. I always like to watch the divisional games, but I don't know. I usually, like I said, during this time, I usually like to watch, you know, the Bears' next opponent and then usually anything going on within the division, although I'll be honest, over the last few years, the Bears have been so far out of it by this point. It's like, you almost kind of hate watching if you're going to watch a team like the Packers. You know, you're hoping that they lose more than anything. But this year, obviously, it's a little bit different.
Speaking of hate watching, we have a poll. I have a poll from Saturday Suckage. The 815 texter who heard me talking about it said, where is the web poll? I'm voting Packers. So it's exactly about hate watching. So Tyler Farengel, our producer, will come on. He's the Steve Kornacki of Suckage web polls. Aaron, and so he'll read you the question, and he'll give you the choices, and you make your selection, and then we'll talk about the results overall. So go ahead, Tyler.
All right, Aaron, here we go. So it is at 670 The Score. You can find it on X. I'm sure you're familiar with that. The tweet is up. At Steve Rosenblum wants to know, who do you hate watch more? And I'll give you your options. Option number one, Aaron Rodgers Jets. Option number two, Jerry Jones' Cowboys. Option number three, the Packers. And option number four, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox.
Oh, my gosh. So I'm a White Sox fan. I used to live in Dallas. So those are, that's tough. I mean, you literally just hit, basically every single one on there. Yeah, this is, that's a good poll. I will say I haven't watched, I barely watched the White Sox at all this year. I haven't watched a full game. So I can't say I hate watch them at this point. You know what? I'm going to have to say Aaron Rodgers because I've really enjoyed this whole mess that's gone down with the Jets. So I say, I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers. As much as I want to say the Packers, the whole Rodgers thing has been very entertaining. I mean, they're the most entertaining 2-4 team that's ever, you know, that's ever graced the NFL at this point. I mean, they're 2-4. They're almost out of the playoff race. And yet everything surrounding the weekly news cycle has been all about Aaron Rodgers, all about Devontae Adams, all about them firing Robert Saleh, but somehow keeping the general manager that has made all the terrible quarterback decisions. So I'll go with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers.
All right. So he chooses the Aaron Rodgers. Why don't you bring us up to date, Tyler, on the web poll and how many votes we have and who's winning?
Absolutely. So maybe counting Aaron's vote, we have 413 right now.
It's just stupid. Okay.
The Packers are currently leading still at 41.6%. Second place, Jerry Reinsdorf's White Sox at 24.2%. Third place is Aaron Rodgers' Jets at 21.8%. And then last place is Jerry Jones' Cowboys at 12.3%.
So there you go, Aaron. You got you've got to rally your Jets. You've got to rally Aaron Rodgers. we're putting that on you for the time being.
I'll take it. You know, funny story about the living in Dallas is I think it was after they lost that they got blown out by Tampa Bay, and that I think it was the wild card round. My neighbor from three doors down took all of his Cowboy stuff out to the street and burned it in the street. And keep in mind, we lived in an HOA, so that was a giant mess. But I won't lie. I mean, he's a cool guy, but I enjoyed every minute of that. Like the whole Cowboys thing will never get old to me either.
Yeah, we're with you on it. And the fact that Jera doesn't want tough questions on the radio. I'm coming on, but don't you ask me tough questions. I'll get someone else. I'll buy somebody else to ask tough questions. I don't think he understands the object of the exercise, much as he doesn't understand the object of the exercise as a football GM. So that must have been loads of fun down there with Jera.
I'm sure, I don't live down there anymore, but I've talked to a few friends and that are Cowboys fans, and it's been a mess. I mean, because they're 3-3. I mean, it's not even like they're out of it, but you know, Jerry doesn't do himself any favors with the stuff that he does. And I heard some of the little bit that he said, and I don't know what the truth there is, whether he's actually paying those guys or not, but it's like, either way, come on, man, have some thicker skin. You know, your team's underperforming. There's stuff going on. Like, you've got some questions to answer, but you know, that's just typical Jerry.
There you go. We love that. Not enough bad stuff can befall them. Aaron, I thank you for your time today. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Always appreciate you having me on.
All right. Take care. That's Aaron Lemming, 24/7 Sports, SB Nation, talking Bears here. I want you to listen to me. I want you to, because we're givers here on The Score. We're givers, not takers. Be listening to Bernstein and Harris all this week for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Will Ferrell's Ultimate DJ House Party next Saturday at Wintrust Arena. Swedish House Mafia, D-Nice, A-Track, and more will be hosted by Will Ferrell. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to have example after example of why October is the best, most romantic, most wonderful month in baseball. Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby. Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe warned the Chiefs.
Owns. Owns.
Owns. Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Yes, we have. Saturday Suckage, the cultural zeitgeist segment. Coming up, before we get done, I will be giving away something. That's what we do here. We're givers, not takers. We're pleasers, not teasers. Here on Saturday Suckage, I will be giving something away. Stay tuned. And our last segment will feature some just inexplicably wonderful Wake and Bake Club audio. But first, the cultural zeitgeist. 8 years ago this week, back when the Cubs earned the right to play in the greatest month in baseball, this happened.
The windup and the pitch. Montero drives one in the air. Deep right field. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam. Miguel Montero.
Third pinch slam in postseason history. Miguel Montero, which is Spanish for we don't have to face Johnny Cueto. That's what that meant. Several years ago, Andy Martinez of Marquee posted a piece on the anniversary. And so, no, well, not Johnny Cueto. That was a whole different thing. I'm conflating these things because it's such a blur since the Cubs last played something meaningful. Anyways, Andy Martinez of Marquee posted a piece on the anniversary several years ago, and it was a wonderful walk down memory lane, a lot more enjoyable than the misery the Cubs have given us lately. Game one NLCS against the Dodgers, tied at 3, bottom of the 8th. Ben Zobrist led off the inning with a double off Dodger reliever Joe Blanton. After a ground out, Dave Roberts decided to intentionally walk Jason Hayward. I'm just going to let that sit there. Blanton induced a fly ball to Javi Baez. That meant David Ross's spot was up next. So Joe Maddon turned to Chris Coughlin. Like some of these names are just going, oh yeah, you're going, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Chris Coughlin pinch hit, Aroldis Chapman's spot on deck. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts decided to intentionally walk Coughlin to load the bases to get Chapman out of the game. That's what brought Montero to the plate. Blanton got ahead working an 0-2 count on Montero. Third pitch of the at-bat, Montero sent a slider into the right field bleachers, hysteria, and a moment we just relived. It's unbelievable. His blast was the third pinch hit in postseason history. He was hitting .221 with 8 home runs against righties. He was hitting just .189 with no homers against southpaws. This, again, from Andy Martinez's piece a couple years ago, reliving the anniversary. In his career, Joe Blanton had thrown 273 0-2 sliders without ever giving up a home run. Montero ended that. Opponents were hitting .083 against Blanton's slider in 0-2 counts with 2 hits and 18 strikeouts and 24 at-bats. Montero hit a grand slam, pinch slam. And here's something I had forgotten about completely because it didn't matter. Dexter Fowler homered on the next pitch to make it 8-3. Dodgers scored in the top of the ninth. They added that run. And then Baez stole home in the game, the first time a Cubs had done so since Jimmy Slagle in the 1907 World Series. You know, that was the moment when Miguel Montero etched his name into Cubs lore. And it's fitting. It kind of bookended playoff moments, those postseason moments, because he drove in the decisive runs in the 10th inning in Cleveland. Ben Zobrist got a hit extending the rally. Montero drove in the runs that would make the difference. He might be the most underrated hero in Cubs history.
It's a great point. A lot of people forget that Montero put the game-winning run up on the board for the Cubs.
So speaking of baseball, October baseball, championship series, baseball anniversaries. Last night, if you were watching, Giancarlo Stanton went all Stanton. A bomb required NASA's assistance to track down. And in doing so, Giancarlo Stanton became the second Yankee to hit 4+ homers in a postseason multiple times, joining, who do you think, Tyler Farengol?
Babe Ruth.
Reggie Jackson.
Oh. Mr. October.
Very timely. And here's why. Because while Giancarlo Stanton was tying Reggie Jackson last night, 47 years ago last night, Reggie Jackson was providing the World Series one of the greatest hitting displays ever. 3 homers. He hit 3 homers in the World Series against the Dodgers. At the time, Reggie and Babe Ruth, your aforementioned Yankee hero, in 1928, were the only players to hit 3 in a series game. Reggie, Babe, 3 homers in 1 World Series game. That was it. Since then, I did not know this. I know what happened, but I hadn't known this list was this special. Albert Pujols of the Cardinals in 2011 and Pablo Sandoval in 2012. The Panda! Panda did it. Now, Sandoval and Pujols did it in consecutive at-bats. Reggie did too. But Reggie's was greater. Reggie's was full of the showmanship. Every part of the man, everything displayed in his career. Reggie Jackson did it in 3 consecutive at-bats against 3 different pitchers on just 3 pitches. Reggie. And he did it in Yankee Stadium in the only series that matters. Mr. October, indeed. Omaha! 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 Tyler Farengold, you follow the Twitter account called Actual Names?
No, I do not. But I feel like I should after you presenting me with this.
It's, or I guess I should say X, but Twitter. We all know what is Twitter. Well, the Actual Names is one of the most entertaining accounts you'll find. Because basically it's a lot of snickering frat boy humor and a lot of interesting names. As it says, actual names culled from lists I didn't know existed. But I bring this up now not to jeopardize the station's license by reading some of the names, but instead one that would be near and dear to this show. The mother of the bride, according to Pennsylvania County marriages in their list from 1885 to 1950, the mother of the bride was named Catherine Suckage. Catherine Suckage, ladies and gentlemen, the mother of the bride. Omaha! 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 All right. 30 years ago this week, we heard this in the movie theaters.
Get busy living. Or get busy dying.
Yeah, there's your advice. Get busy living or get busy dying. Whether you're in an actual prison, a movie prison, or just the prison of your mind and your own life and whatever constraints you put yourself on. One of the greatest movies ever. It also had the misfortune of being released with Pulp Fiction. Also one of the greatest movies ever. One of the most creative ways to tell a story. The thing about The Shawshank Redemption is it didn't do much at the box office. But it became an all-time classic on video, the secondary markets. It's still, you'll hear people today talk about getting Shawshanked. What that means, like they get Godfathered or they get Goodfellowed. If you see that movie, if it's on, if you're flicking around and you flip onto it and you go, oh, and then you're going to watch it to the end. You got Shawshanked. So I didn't know this until last weekend, but you can take a tour of the Ohio State Reformatory, which is essentially a castle with steel cells. The Ohio State Reformatory that stood as Maine's Shawshank State Prison in the movie. It was in Mansfield, Ohio. You can take a tour of that. I did not know that. Use the Googler if you're interested in this, and you can get to Shawshank Trail. All the details there, but I'm going to give you some because I can't resist. There's a Shawshank Museum, which has props and set pieces and costumes and other treasures involved in the movie. And, of course, there's a museum store. It couldn't be a museum without having a museum store. You need a gift shop on the way out. And the thing also includes the tunnel that Andy crawled through to freedom. There's a Shawshank bus tour. Of course there is. Visit 10 local filming locations in 3 hours while being led by a professional guide. Included is a full 90-minute guided Hollywood meets history walking tour of the Ohio State Reformatory. So if you do this yourself, it's $30. If you go on the bus, it's $40. There you go. I've helped you plan your summer vacation, and maybe you'll hear this.
Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies.
Like Saturday Suckage, no good thing ever dies. Andy Dufresne and Red. Yeah, we have to give something away. We've just given away all sorts of knowledge about Shawshank Redemption. So now we're going to do a giveaway. Before we take a break and come back with the Wake and Bake Club meeting, and boy, I encourage you to stick around and listen to the audio we have for you. It's a stitch. Here's the deal. I am giving away a pair of tickets to see Spiegel and Holmes live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage this Thursday. That's October 24th, 2 to 6 p.m. They'll be joined in studio by Dave Wannstedt and other special guests. The tickets go to the sixth caller to the Scores contest line. That number, 312-540-0670. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can... I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey, 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 hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like... breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like, breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Welcome in, Wake and Bake Club. Welcome in, Wake and Bakers. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We call this meeting to order. A week after Yom Kippur, we have a holiday tomorrow, a new high holiday. October 20th is Snoop Dogg's birthday. Jimmy Kimmel, I love Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel declared last year that the dog father's birthday would be our new high holiday. And it certainly works for the Wake and Bake Club, and that's tomorrow. October 20th, that the dog father of doobies, the guy who's on the face of one of the faces of Mount Cushmore. Oh, yeah, sure. So this week, he was on the Today Show, and he reveals he's going to be working with Zach Bryan, right? Snoop, Zach Bryan. He said, Zach sent me a song. I got to put a verse on it. Now, let's think about Zach Bryan. Is he living the life or what? You see Rolling Stone? They put Zach Bryan and Bruce Springsteen in a room and told him to talk. And they shared some stuff, and it was really good. And now, so Zach Bryan is sitting down with Bruce Springsteen, and now he's going to be working on a record, a song, with Snoop. Wow. Spark a number, kid. You're doing well. But the best part of Snoop's visit to the Today Show. I remember he was the NBC breakout star in the Olympics. The best part was he's visiting the set. And Al Roker, the weatherman, asks Snoop to join him because they have a special forecast from around the nation made perfectly for Snoop and the Wake and Bake Club.
Hey, let me get this weather together real quick.
Okay, so Snoop, we prepared a special map. All you got to do is touch the map, and you will see some special Snoop cities. So okay. Hold on. Here we go.
Okay.
All right, so for example, we got...
Al, it's 57 degrees in Mary Jane Falls, Nevada.
That's right.
And then I heard it was going to be 56 degrees in Stoner, Colorado.
That's right.
But my favorite is when it's nice, hot, and misty outside, 84 degrees in Blunt, South Dakota.
Oh my God, that's right.
Sliding on down to this area right here, above the average highs, 70 degrees in Roach, Missouri. You understand me? And over here, you know, we stay lucky in Kentucky. It's going to be 60 as we blaze in Blaze, Kentucky. You dig?
Hell yeah.
And over here, we got Pottsville, Pennsylvania, where it will be 60 degrees. And down low on the go, 61 degrees at High Point. Get that, High Point, North Carolina.
Snoop Dogg doing the weather. As only Snoop Dogg can, and doing it with the Today Show really did. That was excellent work. That was just wonderful. Blunt, South Dakota. How good is that? How wonderful is that?
I got to take a vacation up to Blount, South Dakota.
You do. Okay, so where are we? Before we get out of here, and we'll be getting here, being getting out of here momentarily, we asked you to join our web poll. And so where are we, Tyler? Our web poll. Who do you hate watch more? Who's got the most votes?
Well, I mean, technically, you still have 21 hours left to vote, but we'll call it right now after this edition of Saturday Suckage. The Packers are the winner at 40.7%.
Followed by Jerry Reinsdorf's Sox
at 23.6%.
Jerry Aaron Rodgers' Jets.
22.5%.
Jared Jones's Cowboys.
Jared's Cowboys are at 13.2%.
All right, if nobody important listened, I'll be back next week on Saturday Suckage, The Score. Stay tuned for a replay of the official Chicago Marathon post-race show.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
It. You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.